From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarcos have won the Kentucky Derby. And the final time was 1:59.45. He was as fast as Secretariat.
Arrowgate, full out. Can he stick with it? California Chrome. Arrowgate still coming. California Chrome.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
It's Ali Dar and Affirm battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Ali Dar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Ali Dar heads apart. Affirm's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
The Derby winner, Barnett Bird, closing a late gap, but it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Well, let the madness begin. Well, no, not really. Still a ways away from March Madness and the version of March Madness in thoroughbred racing when you start seeing all the major Kentucky Derby prep races being run with the Bluegrass and the Santa Anita Derby and the Louisiana Derby and all the traditional ones that usually see a couple of horses punch their tickets to the first Saturday in May. That doesn't mean that the stakes aren't high later this afternoon when we embark upon the road to the Kentucky Derby with the Sham Stakes at Santa Anita and the Mucho Macho Man at Gulfstream Park. And I'll tell you all about those as we move throughout the program here this morning. Good morning and welcome to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, of course presented by our friends at Red Brand Fence. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. And you know, this is the show that we often refer to as the show that launched a network, that launched the Horse Racing Radio Network, because it even the Equine Forum even predates me in a different form. It was a one-hour show when I started on radio back in 2003. But that means, considering the fact that this is the first Equine Forum program of the new year of 2020, that means that the Horse Racing Radio Network that was officially launched in 2005 is entering its 15th consecutive year. And this is the 17th year of me being able to talk about the sport that we all love on radio. And it is truly a privilege and can't wait to see what 2020 brings. And if you're wondering about that countdown to the Kentucky Derby, 119 days, 9 hours, 47 minutes, and 1 second. Until the Run for the Roses, May 2nd at Churchill Downs. So you've got the Mucho Macho Man, 1 mile, a one-turn one-mile race at Gulfstream Park today. Not a big field, but it is bigger than the Sham. 7 horses going in the Mucho Macho Man. The Sham has 6, which, by the way, the Sham, a grade 3, is a points race. 10 points, Derby points, qualifying points, going to the winner of the Sham Stakes. The Mucho Macho Man does not offer any Derby points. Number 2, Chance It, for our friend Safi Joseph Jr., native of Barbados, is the 9-5 morning line favorite at Gulfstream Park in that Mucho Macho Man. The Florida bred has been really good against restricted company, but now he has to prove that he can take this next step. And look, this is a starting point. We're not looking for the Derby winner here on January 4th. We might see the Derby winner on January 4th. And I think any trainer would tell you this is the first step. And you still, look, these are two-year-olds, recently turned 3 just a couple of days ago. These are horses still trying to prove that they belong in the discussion of a true Derby contender. I'm going to catch up with Safi coming up later in the first half of the program. I'll ask him about Chance It. We'll talk to Safi about his monster year that he had. Huge, huge year in 2019. Math Wizard took him to the Breeders' Cup Classic. And that was a big moment for Safi, for his father, Safi Sr., who works with him, and for his entire family. Safi's been a good trainer, a really good trainer, for a very long time. And he's now starting to get the kind of horses that can take him to the major races all over the country, all over the world. Math Wizard, by the way, pointing for the Saudi Cup. So I'm going to ask Safi about that. I'll ask him about Chance It and being, at least initially, on the Derby trail with a horse like Chance It. That's coming up at 8:35 Eastern time. Also going to talk to Aaron Wellman from Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners. They had a big win on New Year's Day. Independence Hall taking the Jerome at Aqueduct. And Independence Hall was a handful. I don't know if you got a chance to see that. He was a handful in the paddock before the race. Didn't stop him from running a big race. Didn't stop him from remaining undefeated. And at this point, with so many three-year-olds still trying to prove that they truly belong.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
2019 champion General Sire Into Mischief, Spendthrift's first since Seattle Slough.
Coming down to the line, and Covfefe does it!
2019 champion Second Crop Sire Golden Sense, Into Mischief's best son and one of only eight sophomore sires ever to top $5.5 million in progeny earnings.
And they're running away! Mr. Money by Five!
One serious sire line in the making. Spendthrift, the breeder's farm.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
With 24 individual winners, 4 stakes winners, and 11 stakes horses, champion-elect freshman sire American Pharoah has made a stunning start at stud. The 2015 Triple Crown champion is developing into a truly international sire, with winners in 6 different countries. American Pharoah also became the sire of the highest-priced horse sold anywhere in the world in 2019, when his yearling filly out of Leslie's Lady sold for $8.2 million at Keeneland September to Mandy Pope. With his book nearly full, hurry and call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
This is the Stallion Spotlight, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Tapazara, sterling performance today. Tapazara and Corey Nakatani take the dirt mile.
Here's the wire, and Empire Maker has won the 135th Belmont Stakes.
Still Birdsong in front. Honorable Duty's been trying to get by the entire length of the stretch, but Birdsong goes coast to coast in the Ali Sheba.
Tap it. Eddington fights on. It's going to be a blanket finish. Here's the wire, and Tap It takes it.
Won the Kentucky Oaks, trained by Nick Zito, and the filly proved that record-setting time in the Kentucky Oaks was no fluke, coming back to win the Acorn, and I believe that time still stands. And then, of course, Birdstone himself came up with that amazing win in the Kentucky Derby, almost unbelievable. As mentioned by the commentator, Tom Durkin, mind that bird up the rail, Calvin Burrell. You know, it was amazing. I was so such a genius at the time, I was taking bets on him, much less betting on him. So anyway.
that reminds me of my Holy Bull story when Giacomo won the Kentucky Derby and the son of Holy Bull. And I stood there about the eighth pole with a Holy Bull ball cap on and never had a nickel to win on Giacomo. Couldn't believe it.
Racing, you know, it's the great it's the great equalizer. You know, these horses, they can't read the tote board. They don't know what price they are. So if you like a horse in the paddock, go with your gut, remembering the horse doesn't know what he cost and doesn't know what odds he is. And it's just up to him how he feels on the day. And generally, horses who display confidence in the paddock and look especially well run over their odds.
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, when you think back on 2019 and the year that was for Gainsway, I think one of the highlights for you, Michael, personally, and for the entire Gainsway team had to be sharing that big win in the Breeders' Cup, the Juvenile Fillies Turf. What a performance that was for Graham Motion.
Well, it was. This is a really talented filly, daughter of Spitestown. She was bought in partnership with Aaron Wellman, Eclipse Thoroughbreds, and Sharing's a special filly. Beautiful temperament. She's big and kind, rangy. She's strong. And I think we haven't seen the best of her yet. She was a very good winner of her debut on the main track on dirt at Saratoga. And she powered home by six lengths that day and then came back in the Salima. Graham kept her home in the home base. She went up to Laurel. She won that. It wasn't a strong field, but it was a strong performance. And then she really trained well off that and bounded forward to become a significant challenger in the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita. And I had a couple of small bets in England on her at 20-1. And she came through with a terrific performance. Great ride, of course, Manny Franco. She broke running, got position, saved ground, eased up towards the lead that day at Santa Anita. I can almost have it taped in my head, and I'm watching it. And she powered home, and she's a super prospect going forward for Gainsway Stable, Anthony Beck, and again, Aaron Wellman Eclipse. She was well bought for $350,000 and possibly could make a challenge at Royal Ascot next year in the Coronation Stakes. Group one, fillies, going a mile. She has speed. She'll stay the trip. I think she'll love it. And she does want firm ground. Not that she can't run with a cut in it, but this year there was a lot of rain at Royal Ascot, and our friend Wesley Ward, he had a tough go there because many of his horses, American breds as they are, they want faster ground. But Sharing next year, the coverage sponsored by Lane's End on TV is outstanding.
Yeah.
What a few days there we have to enjoy and get the color commentary from ITV and see such top-class racing day in, day out, and hopefully we'll see several American-bred winners on what is really, you know, a supreme showcase of racing.
Visiting with Michael Herner from Gainsway here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is your Stallion Spotlight segment. We're going to talk about some of the Gainsway Stallions in just a minute, but Michael, the other side of Gainsway, the other aspect of it, which is always highly successful, is the sales side of it. And you had another monster year in 2019. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, we're a great product to sell. We start off the sales year at Fasig Tipton July. And for the right horse, that's the early maturing commercial type. And that sale is dominated by mainly pinhookers. And then you will get some trainers there. And then we went up to Saratoga with a good group. That's a very boutique sale, high quality. And we had another very good sale up at Saratoga, and it traditionally produces many top horses. They're very select. You certainly pay for them, and of course, Sharing came out of that sale. but as many others have. And then we came to Keeneland September. We were loaded again this year following a terrific year last year, the previous year. And great thanks to our clientele and many top readers consigned with Gainsway, and those sales are supported by progeny of Tappet and Empire Maker, our own home breads, and you know, this year we averaged, we grossed over 33 million in gross yearling sales, which put us up there near the top position, if not top by average and median. We also have a very strong clearance rate, and it's pretty straightforward selling. Top horse, come buy it. There'll be competition for it, and the horses are fairly reserved, and they sell at a very high rate based on horses offered. And probably the most recent and most obvious sale graduate would be Covfefe.
Yeah.
And Covfefe was bought by Alex Solis and Jason Litt. She races for L&J Foxwoods and trained by Brad Cox. And she turned into a brilliant sprint filly, Breeders' Cup winner, highly likely Eclipse Award winner herself. So good horses have come out of the consignment over the years. Buyers know that. They buy with confidence. And looking forward to next year, we've got some very good, just turned fresh yearlings, and we'll try and position them as best we can through the year. And then we'll also go to, again, Fasig Tipton in October, where we had several good sales the last few years. And that's a good sale for a yearling that needs some time. I'm a big believer in letting horses develop and not rushing them. And then, we've a great staff. Brian leads up on the sales division, Brian Graves, and strong support from Sherry and Lester Rogers, and a great crew of people working together, and it works.
As you were going through and talking about some of the horses that you sold, you mentioned a pretty big name, and that's the name of Tappet, who is a sensational perennial leading sire at Gainsway. He's coming off of another big year in 2019, and really, Michael, starting to emerge as one heck of a broodmare sire, too.
He is, for sure. He had 13 graded stakes winners this year. He holds his position. He's a breed-shaping sire. Earners now of over 150 million, but as you point out, he's emerging as a very good broodmare sire. And this really is no big surprise, because he's been bred to many top pedigreed fillies, and the average production is going to be 50% fillies versus colts. And now a lot of those daughters are into production. And he's already becoming very quickly a very effective broodmare sire, and people will be looking at their catalogue pages, and when they see Tappet as the broodmare sire, I think that's going to give them an extra check mark. he's been a revelation from the beginning. Tappet was the leading freshman and juvenile sire, largely through the success in year one of Stardom Bound. She won 5 grade ones. And then, we had a plethora of graded stakes winners. His stud fee appreciated incrementally from the 15,000 to 35 to 50 to 100 to 150 and up to 300. And he was leading general sire for 3 consecutive years. And he's had 3 Belmont winners. And hope maybe this year we'll see maybe one of his sons can win the roses. That would be a big feather in his cap, but he's been so dominant and so influential and so significant to Gainsway.
Yeah, and he's become such a sire of sires, too, not just a broodmare sire, but you look at his sons Tapazar and Anchor Down, who are standing at Gainsway, and then Constitution, who's over at Windstar, really off to an amazing start with his stud career, too, and he's a son of Tappet.
He is, for sure. And, there for a year or two, people were starting to question whether Tappet had become a sire of sires. And it would be wrong not to mention Tapazar, Breeders' Cup.
Yeah.
Dirt mile winner himself. He stands at Gainsway. He's a leading fourth crop sire by graded stakes winners. He's influential. He's value. And, of course, he sired the spectacular filly Monomoy Girl that, you know, I was delighted to be lucky enough to be co-breeder of. She's back in training. She's at Paul Sharp's in Florida. Hopefully she comes back this year, back to Brad Cox, and can recapture her very high-level performance. She won five grade ones and of course, dominated the Breeders' Cup distaff at Churchill. So Tapazar, he's had several other graded stakes performers. He's well worth a look, and he was a legit racehorse himself, a good-looking horse. And then we've got an exciting young horse in the New York Miler homebred stallion, bought by Steve Young, named Anchor Down. Anchor Down was trained in New York by Todd Pletcher, and he was a fast horse, good miler. He's out of a graded stakes winning orientate mare, namely Successful Outlook, and he's half to Sweet Lulu, trained by Jerry Hollendorfer, and she won the test at Saratoga. And this horse's stock really impressed me. He's a taller, scopier version of Tappet, but very like Tappet, and breeds like him in the shed. He's all business. It's get tied on when he comes in. And I'm pretty optimistic. He had some good sales. He's highly fertile. He's affordable. He's well worth a look. And now with Tappet emerging as an influential sire of sires, breeders, you know, can well get some good value there and get into that Tappet blood, which is significant and has a lot of vibrance and vitality.
We have about 2 minutes left before we have to get to our Lexus Legends of the Turf segment for this week. But, Michael, I want to give you a chance to talk about one other Gainsway stallion, and that's Kara Conti, because Kara Conti has really been doing some outstanding things in his stud career.
Well, I'm a huge believer here in Kara Conti, and it's easy to be. I went to Chanty in France with Alan Cooper to see him. He was bred and raced by Flaxman. The mare had been sent to Japan for breeding there, so Kara Conti was actually dropped in Japan. So that's why he's got JPN after his name. And Kara Conti made an immediate impression. He was a very good two-year-old, Group 1 winner of the Jack Lauder. Then he came back as a three-year-old. He won the influential French 2000 Guineas, as did Blushing Groom, Irish River, Riverman, all Gainsway stallions. And then he came to Santa Anita, and he ran out of his mind in the Breeders' Cup. He ran and won. He ran a mile in 132 and change. And he went off at a huge price. He was very impressive. He accelerated, excuse me, right past many good milers, and he won very impressively. He's now started the next phase of his life as a stallion at Gainsway. He's had five first crop stakes horses, including the very good Kensai Warrior, undefeated two-year-old in England and a group winner. He's got several stakes horses here in the U.S., and he's got one running today. Sol Volante will contest the Mucho Macho Man at Gulfstream. I think it goes off at 4:30, trained by Patrick Biancone, French trainer himself. And this horse is 2 for 2. He's talented. He's won both his starts on turf. He's going to take a shot and move over to the main track. He's trained very well for it. At Palm Meadows, he worked in a minute and one, was sixth fastest of 20. So today, Zona Kara Conti, and this is a stallion with a lot of horses on the come. He's very fertile, great breeder, good-looking horse, had all the qualities. He had the performance on the track. He certainly got the pedigree. The third dam is Miesque, hugely influential. She is five-time champion. Miesque, again, she was a product of Flaxman, co-owner, and those are the folks who raced Kara Conti, Maria Niarchos, who has significantly supported the horse, as has Anthony Beck, and will continue to do so. So Kara Conti, he's a name to get familiar with. You'll hear a lot more from him this year as these good two-year-olds turn three, and a significant young stallion on the rise at Gainsway.
And you can learn more about all of the Gainesway Stallions by visiting Gainesway.com. That's your site, your home for all the top stallions, Gainesway.com. Go there and check them out today. Michael, as always, appreciate the visit here. Thanks for the croissants, and Happy New Year. Let's make 2020 bigger and better than ever.
Yeah, and just on a passing moment, I've got a little horse of my own in partnership named Blue Ridge Mountain, and he's in Florida with Mary Epler, son of Tapazar. So keep an eye out for him. He's impressive in his maiden win. He's just turned four. He's a gelding, but he's given us the impression that he might be quite useful, and son of Tapazar, so it's home team investment again.
Yeah, maybe Breeders' Cup Mile winner, Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, Breeders' Cup Classic. Who knows? The sky's the limit.
We'll chat about him later in the year.
All right, Michael Herner from Gainesway. That's your Stallion Spotlight segment for this morning. Time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty. They want to be the dealership of the equine industry. They've been doing it for a very, very long time. You go see the Godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great people at the Lexus Store of Lexington, and they will take care of you. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf. When I come back, Safi Joseph Jr., he'll join me.
Racing for his breeder, Mrs. Phipps Wheatley Sable, this horse won the juvenile, youthful, and the paternity as a two-year-old. At three, he was Horse of the Year after chalking up scores in the Flamingo, Wood Memorial, Preakness, Bahamas, Trenton, Queens County, Vosburgh, and Benjamin Franklin Handicaps. He equaled the track record in the Bahamas in going the seven-panel distance in 1:22 flat. He set a new track record in winning the Vosburgh 7 furlongs in 1:21 and 4, a new track record for 9 furlongs in copping the Flamingo in 1:47 flat, and went the same distance in nailing down the Wood in 1:48 and 4. As a three-year-old, are you listening out there, horseman? He was asked to shoulder 136 pounds in winning the Ben Franklin. He packed 130 in the Vosburgh, the highest weight ever shouldered by a three-year-old in that event. At the age of four, he won the Toboggan under 133 pounds, the Carter under 135, the Stymie packing 133, and the Suburban and the Monmouth toting 134 pounds. When he hung up his running shoes, as it were, he had started 33 times and had won 23 with 4 seconds and two-thirds. He became the leading sire with only 2 crops of racing age in 1963, and his stud services very quickly rose to the level of almost being beyond affordability. His reign as leading North American sire for seven consecutive seasons was not only heretofore unmatched, but not even remotely approached at that time in the 20th century. Bull Lee and Lexington had stood alone in their time, but this horse literally dwarfed all his competitors in the breeding shed in terms of successive progeny on the racetrack. There was a question raised from time to time regarding his ability to impart stamina to his get, although he had won in the 1 3/16 mile Preakness and the 1 1/4 mile Trenton Suburban and Monmouth Handicaps. The vast majority of his get exhibited blazing speed on the racetrack. There were a number of his get, however, that could be classified as stayers, including among those would be Lamb Chop, Bateur, Bull Bitter, Stahanas, Boldauer, Dewan, Successor, and Gamely, just to name a few. They were all winners in stakes company at 1 1/4 miles or better. He was a leading sire of two-year-olds for 5 seasons, 3 of those consecutively. The uninterrupted 8-year reign at stud for this horse, and 12 years in all, including that of his sire Nazrella, is a record to this day for a father-son combination. His progeny often did not have extended racing careers. They were too valuable at stud. Just hearken to this list in addition to those already mentioned, and really, time precludes doing too justice to this prodigious and lengthy compilation. Bull Commander, Bull Princess, Speedwell, Bull Queen, Beautiful Day, Chieftain, Bull Lad, Time for Bed, Cornish Prince, Bold Experience, Jacinto, Staunchness, Jove, Bold Nesian, Queen Empress, Great Power, My Boss Lady, Disciplinarian, Master Bull, What a Pleasure, Big Advance, Virginia Delegate, Irish Castle, Raja Baba, Plum Bold, and on. In a word, absolutely awesome. This particular titan of the turf was foaled at Claiborne April 6, 1954, and that was a most noteworthy indeed day for that farm and racing as a whole. You see, 1/2 hour after this foal was dropped, another foal was brought into the racing world who in time on the racetrack became the world's leading money winner, Round Table. The marvelous thoroughbred that has been the subject of this dissertation went his way to the great paddock in the sky July 12, 1971, and with him went a remarkable record on the racetrack and in the breeding shed. He was Bold Ruler.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Menad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, thoroughbred jockey, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And around the far turn, Gaffleon hasn't released the brakes on Chance It. He moves to a clear lead. Smash Factor is all in. Liam's Lucky Charm not making much of an impact with less than a quarter of a mile to go. It's Chance It's race to win or lose. He's off the turn with a 5-length lead now. Smash Factor is flat to the board, second down the center pole with Liam's Lucky Charm. But let there be no doubt who's best. The In Reality goes to Chance It. Chance It wrapped up, geared down, and 6 on top. Second, Smash Factor, Liam's Lucky Charm third, then Poe and Chivalry, followed by Rebel Day, Genghis, Rosa's Way, and Nanacub. Wilshire Diamond completes the field in 144 and 1.
Pete Aiello with the call of the In Reality Stakes. A big win for Chance It. Drew off to win by more than 7 lengths that afternoon. Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on this fourth day of January 2020, first show of the new year, and that means that many of the horses that are Derby hopefuls are getting ready to embark upon that road to Churchill Downs, and Chance It doing just that later today in the Mucho Macho Man for our good friend, that's trainer Safi Joseph Jr., who is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Safi, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Good. How about that call? Chance It. Big win last time out.
Yeah, that was his first time going 2 turns, and obviously handled it the right way, the way you would want to see him do it, and hopefully he can have a repeat performance of that today.
Yeah, what makes him so impressive to you, Safi?
Just the way he carries himself. You watch him breeze and work, and he just awes you. He has a different way of going that I don't know how to describe, but he just is almost like he floats. And he doesn't seem to get tired. Very rarely do we ever get him to blow. Even he's worked some quick times, and you never really get him to blow, which is a good thing. It means that normally he's got a lot more there still.
What have the past couple of months been like for him? He hasn't been out since that win on September 28th, so what have they been like for him?
Yeah, initially we decided that we were going to skip the Breeders' Cup and back off of him. Then we had thought about going to the Jockey Club, and he got a virus, so he missed it all the time, so we changed and we rerouted to the race at Remington, the Springboard Mile, but they had the quarantine, and we were on go to that race, and with the quarantine, we weren't allowed to go because we wouldn't be able to come by the Gulfstream. So then the next plan was the Mucho Macho Man, which we're at now. And he's trained for these since. Seems to be in good form, looks well, and obviously coming off a layoff and facing it, there's some quality horses in there also. So that's you never know how tight you have them, but we think we have them as good as we could get them.
Yeah, every year when we start seeing the newly turned three-year-olds make their first start of the new season, we hear that the adage that, you know, those couple of months from, say, September or October to January can be huge in terms of the physical and the mental development for these young horses. So compare what you see from Chance It today on January 4th compared to what you saw back at the end of September.
Definitely much more relaxed in his work. Before, he wanted to go. Now we've been giving him targets, and he'll sit back and he'll wait for the cue, and he'll go when it's time to go. And that's the attribute that he'll need to have as the races get tougher. You need to relax and listen to the rider when the rider asks him to relax and go, hopefully, when the rider wants him to go. So I think that's the biggest development mentally he's shown. And before, early in his career, he was playful. He'll go on his hind legs a lot, but he's always business on the track. And I think he's matured more mentally. That's the biggest aspect in that sense, just learning to do things the right way. And he's always been impressive. He has naturally talent, raw talent. There's a lot of talent there, and he's learned to control it now.
Yeah, and he's always been forwardly placed in all of his career starts. I don't think he's been worse than third, and that was in his debut when he was kind of shuffled back a little bit that day. He likes to be up close to the pace. Is that what you expect from him again today?
Yeah, I think he just has a naturally high cruising speed that he doesn't need to be on the leader, but he's just naturally fast that he puts himself into a good spot. And that's what we hope for today. Hopefully he gets away from there cleanly and Tyler can see how the race is going and put him where he needs to be.
Post time for the Mucho Macho Man at Gulfstream, 4:30 Eastern. It will no doubt go a little bit later than that, probably a little closer to 5 o'clock by the time they run it. But, yeah, a big, big moment for Chance It, and we'll see if he can maybe put himself on that Derby trail. Do you look at him right now, Safi, as a horse that is a legit Derby contender, or do you still have things that you need to see from him?
Yo, I mean, ability, I think he's one of the best three-year-olds out there. But it's easier said than done, and he's going to have to prove it each time, you know what I mean? So for me, I always wanted to prove it before you could speculate. But definitely, we're Derby dreaming at the moment. He has the talent, and I think distance, he seems like there's no balance in him. So I definitely think we're definitely Derby dreaming, but one step at a time. And today will give us a good indication of where we're at.
Yeah, you got a sense of what it's like to play on the big stage last year when you won the Pennsylvania Derby with Math Wizard and then went on to the Breeders' Cup Classic. He ran, I thought, a very, very good fifth. Matter of fact, I think he was the top three-year-old in the race. I think he finished ahead of all of the other three-year-olds that were in the Breeders' Cup Classic. You had to be very proud of his effort that day. Talk to me about Math Wizard a little bit and what we're looking at for him coming up in 2020.
Yes, for sure. We're definitely proud of how he ran on Breeders' Cup Day. It was a good performance. He did beat all the three-year-olds, and he had a long campaign. To see him there, go there and still show up and run a decent race, we were very happy with that. The plan right now is to aim for the Saudi Cup. That's our main goal. Whether we prep or not, that's still undecided. We're going to play it week to week. But the Saudi Cup is the main goal, and then probably Dubai after that once he runs well.
All right, come on, man. Be honest with me now. Did you ever imagine growing up in Barbados that Safi Joseph Jr. would be training horses in the Breeders' Cup Classic and going to Saudi Arabia for a Saudi Cup with a talented horse like Math Wizard? Did that ever cross your mind that was going to be something that was going to happen to you?
Well, I've dreamed. You always dream, and I've probably won every race in America in my dreams, like dreaming about it. But the Saudi, no, obviously, because Saudi is a new race, but this is where I've dreamed to get, and we're getting the opportunities. The owners are giving us really good horses, and without the owners supporting you and getting good horses, you can't do it, you know what I mean? So we're forever thankful for all the owners putting these super horses in our hands, and we're just going to continue working hard and hope things just keep building and building.
You were kind enough to spend a little time with our HRN colleague, Bobby Newman, before you went out to Santa Anita for the Breeders' Cup, and we produced a really nice feature piece on you that aired as part of our coverage. Safi, when you like look back on that experience in the Breeders' Cup and that whole week and what that was like for you and your family was with you, what was that like for you? Was it everything you thought it would be?
Yeah, I'm more so... makes you just want to work harder to get by there every year. I mean, it was a beautiful experience. Obviously, my family was over there, so you get to enjoy these moments with your family. It's priceless in that aspect. And, definitely want to be there every year, basically. That's the goal, to continue to work hard and build on your stable and just hope that the owners continue to support us. And hopefully we can have horses in more than one race at the Breeders' Cup. That's definitely where we want to be every year.
How do you do that? How do you build a stable and get to this level and get to the level where you can be consistent at this level year in and year out? What's the key?
You have to have a good team. Obviously, it starts with the owner supporting you and good staff. And then the main thing is just to make your owners happy. At the end of the day, the owners have to be happy. They're spending a lot of money, and you got to communicate, talk to them, make sure that they're on the same page. Each owner is different. Each owner has different goals. And just try to get together with each owner and see what their goals are and work together. It's all about a team. Like, it's not only obviously the horses run my name as a trainer and you get the credit, but it's a whole process as far as owners and just the team in general. It's all teamwork, and when you have a good team, which I think we've developed a really strong team, is success is going to come.
How involved are you in selecting the horses and maybe consulting with the owners before a horse comes into your barn?
Well, as far as the claims, I'm very selective. I have a big say in that. But as far as like Chancet, he was sent to us by Mary Leitner. It's her first syndicate that she did. And I was just thinking about today, like, for him to end up in our hands is basically just God sent, because she could have gone anywhere. And here he is. She called me and she said she had a horse for me. And she sent him in. And the first day I got a rider on him, he went up on the air so high. I've never seen a horse go that high. And he would not come down off his hind legs. And I was like, whoa, what did she send to me? And then he galloped that morning, and I was like, whoa, he's a nice horse. And every week he worked, and he'd get better and better. I was like, it's not to say he was a slow day, but from the time he came in, he was just on the racetrack, all business. There was always talent. And the first time he got beat, it hurt me, because normally we don't have them. Like, I always believe in getting the run into them first time, instead of having them cranked up. But I thought that he couldn't get beat first time out. When he got beat, I was kind of shocked that he got beat first time out. And then the second time he came back and he won like how we thought he was in first time out. And after that, it's just been an amazing ride to be with him. I think since I've been in America, I've never had a horse close to his ability. And that's what you dream of, getting a horse like him. And I just hope that he continues to stay healthy and sound, and we get to show everyone how good he is.
Yeah, we're still 119 days away from the Kentucky Derby. Have you already mapped out a schedule for him leading up to the first Saturday in May, or do you just take it one race at a time?
One race at a time, but obviously we have ideas in our head that there's a Holy Bull back here and then there's a Fountain of Youth. But just want to get through one step at a time. You never want to think too far ahead with these horses. Things change so much. So today, if all was to go well today and we would get through, I would say our next step would be the Holy Bull Art of Fountain of Youth, depending on which one we choose to go.
visiting with trainer Safi Joseph Jr. here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Math Wizard, who ran in the Breeders' Cup Classic, being pointed for the Saudi Cup. Safi will make his way over there. And, of course, he has Chance It going to the post this afternoon in the Mucho Macho Man at Gulfstream. Safi, when you sat down with myself and Jude in your barn maybe 4 or 5 years ago now for our Trainer Talk program, we visited for a full hour. And one of the people that you told me that you would like to meet was Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. Now, Bob's trained a couple of Triple Crown winners since, and you, of course, are the trainer of a Triple Crown winner in Barbados. So I'm curious, when you went to the Breeders' Cup, walked into the paddock for the Classic or out there in the mornings, did you get a chance to talk to Bob at all?
No, I didn't get a chance to meet him. I haven't got a chance to meet him yet. Hopefully soon one day.
Yeah, if you meet him, are you going to lead with, you know, hey, I'm a Triple Crown winning trainer too?
No, more definitely not. I mean, obviously, his resume speaks for itself, and hopefully we can, in years to come close to having a resume like him.
Well, you're off to a good start, my friend, and I know you work your tail off, and your dad is there alongside, and he works his tail off too, and it's a great partnership. Saf, we'll look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks when I get down there for the Pegasus World Cup, and all the best with Chance It today, and all the best with Math Wizard when you get ready for the Saudi Cup.
Thank you very much, Mike. Take care.
All right,
nice
buddy.
Talking.
Yeah, Safi Joseph Jr., one of the true bright stars in the sport of thoroughbred racing, no doubt about it, and one of the true good guys, too. They do things the right way, and it's great to see him having the kind of success that he's having this past year and, of course, moving forward here in 2020. We'll see if Chance It can take that first step on the road to Louisville later this afternoon. And Safi, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Going to get to another break. When I come back, I'll set you up for the second half of the program. Going to be a busy second half of the show. We're going to cover an awful lot of ground. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti, a three-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4/5, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. From the Totni Arcos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesk. Caraconti was a precocious Group 1 winner as a two-year-old and has already sired three first crop stakes winners and two additional stakes place two-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior. The Group 3 winner remains undefeated in three starts in England. And Caraconti has commercial appeal, with two-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Caraconti has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainsway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Hard Not to Love, from well out of it, has taken command close to home, and it's Hard Not to Love.
Hard Not to Love. Not hard to love after that performance. The daughter of Darley Stallion Hard Spun made a stunning last to first move to win the Grade 1 La Brea Stakes going away this past weekend at Santa Anita. And that powerhouse victory makes her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Darling Stallion Hard Spun is Danzig's last Grade 1 winning son, who sired more first crop stakes winners than any other stallion before him. Hard Not to Love is now the third Grade 1 winning 3-year-old in 2019 for Hard Spun. Only Quality Road can match him, and only Mr. Prospector ever had more Grade 1 winning 3-year-olds on dirt from a single crop. Learn more about Hard Spun and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Download the special Blood Horse Best of 2019 tablet-only issue with the top feature stories and photographs in Blood Horse Magazine for the entire year. This special issue is available to anyone with a tablet free of charge. You just download it, Blood Horse Magazine and the Blood Horse Magazine app, and then the Best of 2019 tablet issue, which is compliments of Blood Horse. Head over to bloodhorse.com to learn more about downloading that outstanding Blood Horse Magazine and Blood Horse Magazine app. A couple minutes left before we have to get you to the second half of the program. It kicks off with Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union. I'm going to talk some Eclipse Awards with Tim. We both have a vote in terms of the horses that we feel should be the finalists in each of the respective categories. And there were several that Tim and I agreed on, but there were three categories in particular which we were a little bit different, and one, the two-year-old male category, which we were quite a bit different. So I want to talk to Timmy about that coming up in just a couple of minutes. Also going to look back on Mary Lou Whitney and the passing of Mary Lou this past summer. Of course, Mary Lou is one of the choices, the passing of Mary Lou, one of the choices for the NTRA Moment of the Year that you can vote on by going to NTRA.com. Head over there, and of course, they'll announce the winner at the Eclipse Awards coming up on January 23rd. By the way, all of the finalists in each of the Eclipse Award categories will be announced later this morning at 11 a.m. Eastern. That's going to happen at Gulfstream Park. So regardless of what Timmy and I feel and what our opinions are, we'll find out if we're right or wrong, or if there are others to be considered that maybe we didn't see coming. But we'll find out 11 a.m. Eastern time, and that's going to be on xbtv.com. That's where you can watch the announcements of the finalists. Also going to talk to Aaron Wellman in the second half of the show. Aaron, the man behind Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners. You heard Michael Hernan in the first half of the show, first segment, talking about Sharing, who is a pretty good horse, and Aaron involved with Sharing, but Aaron also involved with Independence Hall, who won the Jerome on New Year's Day. So I'll get a chance to talk to him coming up at 9:40 Eastern time, maybe a couple minutes after that. And a brand new segment that we're launching this morning here on the network, and it will air every single Saturday morning on the Equine Forum between now and the Kentucky Derby, quite possibly all the way through the Belmont, but at least now through the Kentucky Derby. It is called Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman, presented by our friends at Spendthrift Farm. And each week, Bobby will spend time sharing his thoughts on not only the three-year-olds that are winning stakes races and are prominent along the road to the Kentucky Derby, but also maybe a horse or two that is under the radar that you'll want to keep an eye on. Maybe a horse who is debuting in a maiden race, or a horse that is coming out of a maiden race, going into an allowance race or a stakes race somewhere. He'll share his thoughts every single week, and then he'll rank his top five selections on the road to the Kentucky Derby from now through the first Saturday in May. And again, that segment, Calling All Three-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift, coming up later this morning. I'll have that for you just before Aaron Wellman, probably about 9:35 to 9:40 Eastern is when you can hear that. You want to make sure you stay tuned, because it's good stuff from Bobby coming up there in just a little bit. All right, so Tim Wilkin kicks it off next. That's hour two. I'll get to that right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming real quiet. He's a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One we'll never forget. Looked impossible.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
On the inside, unaccounted for.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence, rolling on here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy New Year to everybody throughout HRN Nation. Really appreciate you being with me here this morning. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, my interview with Michael Hernan talking about Gainsway and some of the success that they have had over the course of the past year and previewing that stallion roster, or my interview with Safi Joseph Jr. just a few moments ago, as he looked ahead to this afternoon's Mucho Macho Man with the ultra-talented Chance It. All you have to do is head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net, and you can check out a podcast of this program and all of our shows. It will be posted for you this morning after 10 a.m. Eastern, so make sure you do that. You can go back and listen at your leisure. Also, while you're on our website, you'll want to check out our Weekend Stakes Preview, which is presented by Naira Betts, where the Big A, Anthony Stabile, and Steve Grabowski make their selections for the weekend's biggest stakes races. That happens every Friday, and you can go back and listen to the podcast right now at horseracingradio.net. Timmy Wilkin is with me from the Albany Times Union. Tim, we're going to talk some Eclipse Awards, and we're going to look back on the life of the great Mary Lou Whitney. But before we do, welcome to the program, and a very happy new year, my friend.
Hey, Mike, same to you. Hope all is well.
Yeah, everything is great, and looking forward to another hopeful big year of racing here in 2020. But let's start with Mary Lou for a minute, because when you look at the choices that have come out for the NTRA Moment of the Year voting, Goodbye Mary Lou is one of the selections, and it, of course, focuses on the passing of the Queen of Saratoga. She died at the age of 93 earlier this year. I know that you were very close to Mary Lou. You got to spend quite a bit of time with her, being up there in that same region. When you think about Mary Lou Whitney and what she meant, not only to Saratoga, but to racing, what are some of the things that come to mind, Tim?
Well, it's just that I don't know where to start. I mean, she's just done so much. Maybe you start with the things a lot of people don't know that she did, especially for the backstretch workers. I mean, she and her husband, John Hendrickson, when they stopped having the Whitney Gala, I mean, then they really focused their attention on making life better for the backstretch workers, because Mary Lou always thought that they are the backbone of the industry, and something should be done for them. And they would come out, they would have an activity for them every night out at the Jockey Y area at Saratoga. I'm just talking about Saratoga here, and they'd have movie nights, they'd have dinners, they'd have bingo, they'd bring raffles for gifts, and the Whitneys, they would show up to these things too. Because I remember being there, because Mary Lou would always pick the horses for the Albany Times Union, because we have a guest handicapper every day, and she would pick on Whitney Day, and we would always have a bet. If I would win the bet, they would take me out to dinner with whoever I wanted. And if she would win the bet, I would have to do something that she figured out. And when she beat me more times than I beat her, because she did take it real serious. And one time she had me come over and call bingo with Tom Durkin at the backstretch workers thing. And she showed up, sat in the front table, and just laughed and laughed and laughed. I mean, she just had so much, her body was 93, but her mind was still 25. She had an awful lot of fun, and she packed that into every day of her life. I mean, she was just a treasure to this area. And I remember what Nick Zito said to me about it. He said, Mary Lou was to Saratoga what Joe DiMaggio was to the Yankees and Tommy Lasorda was to the Dodgers. And there's probably some truth to that.
Yeah, I would say so. And it wasn't just Saratoga. Of course, that's where she spent a lot of her time, and she did a lot of that great work that you just alluded to. But, I mean, when you think about her impact on the sport of thoroughbred racing and the way that she handled herself throughout her entire life, but certainly in moments where the racing world was completely distraught when Smarty Jones was defeated by Birdstone, and she was all class through that entire process.
Yeah, she apologized for winning the race.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, it was, you know, little Birdstone, you know, shattered the hearts of a lot of people who wanted to see that triple crown for Smarty Jones, who was just such a popular horse. But, you know, she's in the game, too, to win it. But she just felt horrible for the Chapmans and John Service and Stuart Elliott. She just ate. But, you know, they had snatched the triple crown away from him. But and it was genuine. It wasn't like it was a made-up thing. She was genuinely sad that it had to be them that ruined the triple crown bid that everybody wanted to see that day at Belmont Park.
Timmy, why do you think she was able to have the kind of success that she did on the racing side of things with her racing operation? What was it about her philosophy, her approach to the game that allowed her to have that kind of success?
Well, she loved the horses. I mean, I think that's the first thing that comes to mind with her. She loved the animals. She loved the thoroughbred. I mean, you don't see every owner in the world that has a deep, genuine love for the animal like this woman did. I mean, she would come out to, when Nick Zito was training for her, she'd be out there every morning, or most mornings, watching the horses train, and she'd be telling Nick what she thought that he should do, which was kind of cool. I mean, she just had the affection for the game, and, you know, she would tell me stories about when she would used to have these big parties up at Katy Hill in Saratoga, and, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning comes, they're still up, and they have to head down to the Oklahoma or the main backstretch to watch workouts in their party gowns and stuff. And, you know, that's a throwback to a different era. You don't see anything like that anymore. I mean, it goes back too to her first husband, you know, Cornelius Vanderbilt Whitney, who was a stalwart in the game. I mean, it's not like Mary Lou was born into being a thoroughbred, you know, connoisseur kind of woman. I mean, she married into it. But once she married into it, she really loved it.
Yeah, visiting with Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, if you go to ntra.com, you can learn more about the moment of the year voting. And the passing of Mary Lou Whitney, certainly a moment that stands out to me when you think about 2019. And that is one of the choices among the 14 that you have to cast your vote at ntra.com. So head over there and do that. Timmy, also the Eclipse Award finalists are going to be announced in just a little less than 2 hours from right now. They'll do that at Gulfstream Park. And you have a vote. I have a vote. Many people that voted for the finalists had put their selections out there on social media. I prefer to do it on the airwaves here. So every year with this program, I spend time talking about the horses that I feel are worthy of being considered as finalists in the individual categories. And you put yours out there on your social media page, on your Twitter. And you and I agreed on most of the categories. There are a few that we were different, okay. But I think in terms of the ones we agreed on, two-year-old filly, you gave British Idiom the nod there. And I'm just going with the top selections. Three-year-old male, Maximum Security, I agreed with you there. Older dirt male, Vino Rosso, I went that direction too. Male sprinter, Mattoli, female sprinter, Kofefi, Bricks and Mortar for male turf horse, and Uni for the female turf horse. And, of course, we both had Winston C. as the steeplechase horse. All of those we were in agreement. The three categories where we differed, one in particular, the two-year-old male, which I said on the show earlier, That was a painstaking category for me because you could have gone so many different directions. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out my choice. I went with Structor on top over Maxfield and Storm the Court. You went Storm the Court, Tis the Law, Dennis's Moments. We were pretty much on opposite sides of the fences on that one.
Yeah, I mean, Instructor does deserve to get a lot of consideration. I mean, the thing with me is, I don't know, maybe I'm more of a traditionalist. I don't want to usually give it to a grass horse, even though that's probably not the most popular way of thinking with this category. I mean, Structor did nothing wrong in three starts, capping it off in the Breeders' Cup, the juvenile turf race. But, you know, I thought that Tis the Law, who has local, he has some local connections up here. He's just the Sacatoga horse for Jack Knowlton. You know, if he would have won the Kentucky Jockey Club, I think he would have gotten my vote at the top. Of course, he would have been undefeated three starts on the dirt, including the Champagne. But he finished third, and that sort of put the whole category to me in sort of a mess. So I went back to the Breeders' Cup, and even though he won at 45-1, I gave my top selection to Storm the Court. And in that race, which, you know, also featured the highly touted Dennis's Moment and Baffert's Eight Rings, who both didn't do anything. So that kind of screwed their chances. But I just thought that you win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, you're gonna get my vote.
Yeah, and I really did struggle with this category, Timmy, for a lot of the same reasons that you just alluded to. I mean, a horse like Tis the Law, if he did win the Kentucky Jockey Club, he does remain undefeated. Then I think, for me, he would have warranted even more consideration than what I gave him. But because he got beat, I got off of him. Storm the Court, I wanted to give more weight to that win in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I couldn't do it. I guess because he was beaten in the American Pharoah before that, and I was right. when I kind of started mapping out, okay, which of the horses won the most grade ones, the most graded stakes, and I started to kind of break it down that way. And everybody had a very similar resume, with the exception of Structor, who, as we mentioned, undefeated and won the Breeders' Cup. I thought that was, like you, I fought myself on giving it to a horse at a race exclusively on turf, but then I looked at my Horse of the Year ballot, and I voted for Bricks and Mortar, who won all of his races on grass this year. So I tried to be, you know, consistent in that respect, I guess.
I guess I wasn't consistent in that respect. I just, I mean, when you look at the horse of the Year, I mean, I just don't think anyone did what Bricks and Mortars did. You look at the horses on dirt, there was no one that really blew me away to say that, yeah, this is the Horse of the Year.
Yep. Yeah, I agree 100%. It would have been much more interesting had Midnight Bisou won the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Then you would have had a serious debate as to which way you wanted to go with those two.
Yeah, and I didn't go that way.
How about the three-year-old fillies? By the way, visiting with Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The three-year-old filly category, we differed here as well. I went with Gorana on top. Believe it or not, over Cambier Park, and then Kofefi was my third choice in there. You went with Kofefi on top over Serengeti Empress and Dunbar Road.
Yeah. I couldn't put Gorana in there, even as impressive as she was, because, I mean, after that second place finish in the Cotillion, we didn't see her again. I think if you're gonna win a championship, I think you got to run for a championship, and I think you got to go to the Breeders' Cup to do that. And, you know, I thought Kofefe, even though she's a sprinter, was just, I fell in love with her when she won the test at Saratoga. I mean, she was just a very, very, you know, put her head down and just grind things out. And she was just a very deserving winner, in my opinion, even though she's sprinting. Because, again, in a three-year-old filly category, I don't think there was anybody that really blew me away that went over a distance of ground. So I just went with who I thought was the best horse.
Yep.
And that's the Pepe.
Yeah, you're 100% right. There were three horses among the ones that we had to choose from that had won multiple Grade 1 races in 2019. And those were Covfefe, Gorana, and Cambier Park. They ended up as my top three, not necessarily in that order, but those were the three most consistent, most impressive three-year-old fillies. But then we get into the debate, kind of like we did with Structor. Do you give it to a horse like Cambier Park that raced exclusively on turf? And I said, well, no, I don't think I do. And then do you give it to a horse like Covfefe, who was exclusively a sprinter throughout her 2019 campaign, as opposed to Gorana, who did win going long at Saratoga and going a mile at Belmont Park? So that I think that's where I kind of lean toward Gorana, based on the fact that she had won going long.
True, but again, when they put her on the shelf after the Cotillion, I just said, well, I want a horse that's going to show up on Championship Day.
Yep.
So that was my thinking on that.
Yep. And the only other category that we disagreed on was the older dirt female. I ended up going with Midnight Bisou over Blue Prize and Come Dancing, and that may be a bit shocking considering the fact that Blue Prize beat Midnight Bisou on the square when they faced each other in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. You gave the nod to Blue Prize in there.
For the reason that you said.
Yep.
I mean, and, you know, Midnight Bisou just had a marvelous campaign. She won all seven of her races before the Breeders' Cup Distaff. But, you know, it's kind of like a championship day, and Blue Prize was no slouch herself. I mean, she came into that Distaff by winning the Spinster over late, and she to me, she deserved to win because she beat the best Distaff runners on the biggest stage. So she got my vote.
Yeah. And this was tough because I had to look at the number of Grade 1 races, and that doesn't always tell the whole story either. But I tried to at least find some type of quantitative analytic that I could use to compare the two. And you're right. Blue Prize did defeat Midnight Bisou head-to-head in the Distaff. Midnight Bisou had three Grade 1 victories last year, whereas Blue Prize had two. So you're kind of splitting hairs there a little bit. But, I thought for the overall campaign, I'd give it to Midnight Bisou. And then Horse of the Year, we both agreed it's Bricks and Mortar. I went with Maximum Security, gave him a vote in second. You put him third, and I went Midnight Bisou in the third spot. But you ended up going with Vino Rosso among your top three as well. And Vino Rosso, a horse that you and I agree on as an older dirt male, some people may not agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that Mattoli's going to get a lot of support in that. And then you go back to the sprinter versus root horses, and I think that Vino Rosso, he won the sport's biggest race. I mean, the Breeders' Cup Classic is considered to be the championship event for the end of the season. It's like the Super Bowl. If you win the Super Bowl, you're going to be the champion. And Vino Rosso won the Classic. That's the Super Bowl. To me, he's the champion.
Yeah,
but I couldn't give him Horse of the Year.
yeah, I couldn't either. I had to go with Bricks and Mortar there. I thought that win in the Breeders' Cup Turf just was ultra impressive and really cemented. And what a horse! I mean, what everything he had to overcome back in 2017, and then to get back on track and see where he is. What a great job by Chad Brown and the entire team.
And the thing is, that horse he didn't win by a lot some of the times, but he always found a way to get there. I mean, I didn't know if he was going to get there in the Breeders' Cup Turf. And here he came with his run, won by a head. Yeah, Chad did a great job with him. And, I think that, a perfect season, how can you not give it to him? There were some, some flaws on every other horse, I think, that was up in that category. You know, it's tough to argue with perfection.
Yeah, it really is. And again, I mean, you can see when people listen to you and I talk about this, the thought process that goes into making these selections, we don't do them haphazardly. We really try to break it all down. And there are so many deserving horses that could be considered among the top three. And you kind of feel bad leaving a couple of these horses out because we know how difficult it is being in the game to have a horse have a campaign to even be considered Eclipse Award worthy. And I think you'd agree, it's tough sometimes when you have to leave a couple of horses out.
No question, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of horses, like you say, that aren't going to have anything to show for a pretty decent year.
Yep, yeah, no doubt about it. Tim Wilkins with the Albany Times Union. Tim, what's your schedule look like this year? Are you heading down to Pegasus?
Nope, I don't think so. I'm not heading down there. I don't think my first road trip will be until maybe the Wood Memorial. Unless I go down to see Tis the Law run in Florida. I'm not sure yet. But although maybe I'll go down to one of the New York preps, I'm not sure. But if Independence Hall was going to stay in New York, I think I would definitely go. But it looks like he's going to go to Tampa. So, no Pegasus for me.
All right, well, you can follow Tim Wilkin at TJ Wilkin on Twitter. That's at TJWILKIN on Twitter, and you can see all of his full ballot for the Eclipse Awards, and read his piece on Mary Lou Whitney, by the way. Her 94th birthday would have been Christmas Eve, and that was a nice little post that you made there too, Timmy.
Yeah, it was funny. A couple years back, I was up at the Racing Hall of Fame. They had some kind of press conference, and Mary Lou was up there, and it was right around Christmas. And I asked her, I said, so where's my Christmas present? And she looks at me with just the impish smile that she always had. And she goes, well, it's not Christmas yet. So I was waiting anxiously to see if Santa Claus would bring me something from Mary Lou.
That's great. Well, Timmy, listen, appreciate the visit, my friend. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It's the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. So we'll do that. And Happy New Year.
You too, Mike, and hopefully we'll see you down the road.
All right.
Sooner than later.
Thanks for taking the time, bud. Tim Wilkin here on HRRN. Going to get to another break. Aaron Wellman still to come, as well as a brand new segment, Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman, presented by Spendthrift. That's all ahead right here on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Warfront. This son of Danzig ranks among the world's elite sires. With grade one winners on dirt and turf and star performers both at home and abroad, Warfront's success as an international super sire is unmatched. Recent grade one winners include Omaha Beach and Preakness Stakes hero War of Will. In the auction ring, Warfront was the number one sire by highest average at Keeneland September, with yearlings commanding prices up to $2.9 million. Warfront, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
With 24 individual winners, 4 stakes winners, and 11 stakes horses, champion elect freshman sire American Pharoah has made a stunning start at stud. The 2015 Triple Crown champion is developing into a truly international sire, with winners in 6 different countries. American Pharoah also became the sire of the highest-priced horse sold anywhere in the world in 2019, when his yearling filly out of Leslie's Lady sold for $8.2 million at Keeneland September to Mandy Pope. With his book nearly full, hurry and call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Accelerate on the outside, City of Light toward the rail. Castellano and City of Light have the lead, and they cut the corner and open up. City of Light puts away Accelerate with an eighth of a mile to go. At the inside and Seeking the Soul, then Bravazo. But City of Light keeps going, and City of Light will win it. It's City of Light for Javier Castellano, and a romp in the rain. He won by 5. Second is Seeking the Soul, third is Accelerate, then Bravazo and Audible, followed by Gunavera, True Timber, Imperative, Tom's Detente, Something Awesome, Kuko Khan, and Pattern Recognition in 147-3.
I actually put City of Light in my top 3 for older dirt male this year. I don't know how many people are going to do that, but I thought, even though he only had that one start in 2019, that big win in the Pegasus, you just heard Pete Aiello with the call, I thought that that effort was so impressive that he deserved to be in the top 3. I told you, I went Vino Rosso on top of Mattoli and City of Light for my top 3, the older dirt male category. Again, I don't know how much respect City of Light will get just off of that one win, but I thought he was deserving. When you look at the body of work of everybody else that was eligible in there, Vino Rosso, Mattoli, certainly names that needed to be on the list. And then for me, the third choice, City of Light. And again, all those going to be announced at 11 a.m. Eastern time this morning. Welcome back. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios here in the heart of the Bluegrass. A bit rainy over the past couple of days here in Lexington, as it is in many parts of the country. But that doesn't dampen the spirits of racing fans, because we do have Derby prep race action coming up later this afternoon. The Mucho Macho Man, part of a big card at Gulfstream. It's not only about the Derby horses, certainly. We'll spend a lot of time talking about Derby horses over the next several months. But you have a big card at Gulfstream. You have a big card at Santa Anita. The Sham Stakes, a field of 6 going to go to post there. Bob Baffert, no surprise, going to saddle the favorite. Authentic, 8-5 on the morning line. Drayden Van Dyke will be aboard. Much like the Mucho Macho Man, same distance, 1 mile. But it's a 2-turn mile at Santa Anita. And the Sham offers the winner 10 points toward a spot in the starting gate on the first Saturday in May. If you're wondering about the trainer who has won the most runnings of the Sham, yeah, it's Bob Baffert. You could say that about a lot of those big races out in California. Bob has won the race a record 5 times. He won it in 2018 with McKinsey. He won it in 2016 with Collected. 2014, it was Midnight Hawk. 2006, Bob and John. And then the inaugural running in 2001, he won it with a horse by the name of Wild and Wise for Golden Eagle Farm. What do all 5 of those horses have in common? None have won the Kentucky Derby. So if you're looking for a Baffert Derby winner, regardless of what happens today, this probably is not the spot. Although Authentic was very impressive in his debut at Del Mar on November 9th, and that's the reason he's going to be a short price again today in the Grade 3 Sham. Our season here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, at least our race broadcast season, we're already in full flight. Obviously with Red Brand Radio every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoons from 3 to 6, and then our trainer talk shows every Wednesday night from 6 to 7, presented by Fasig Tipton, our BristNet.com call-in show Thursday nights, and the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts on Fridays, and yes, the Equine Forum every Saturday morning. But our race broadcast schedule begins with the Pegasus World Cup in just a few weeks down at Gulfstream Park. January 25th, we'll bring you exclusive radio coverage of the Pegasus World Cup, the Pegasus World Cup Turf, and a couple other stakes on the undercard. Right now, slated to go 4 to 6 Eastern with that coverage, and you want to check horseracingradio.net to see a complete broadcast schedule over the next couple of weeks. We'll have the full 2020 race broadcast schedule posted for you. It also includes the Florida Derby on March 28th and the Santa Anita Derby, Wood Memorial, Bluegrass Stakes, all on April 4th. A new addition to the schedule this year is April 11th. Going to bring you live coverage of the Arkansas Derby from Oaklawn Park. That's new. I told you at the top of the show that this is entering the 15th year of Horse Racing Radio Network. We've never broadcast the Arkansas Derby on site at Oaklawn. So really excited about that. That's April 11th, a brand new addition to our schedule. April 18th, we'll be at Charlestown to bring you coverage of the Charlestown Classic, and then we head right to Churchill Downs with all of our Derby Week coverage. It begins on the Tuesday before with three consecutive Derby Countdown morning shows hosted live from the backstretch. And then the Kentucky Oaks and Derby Day, and of course, all three Triple Crown races exclusively here on HRN and Westwood One and NBC Sports Radio. Those three broadcasts, the Derby, Preakness, and Belmont, produced in partnership. We'll bring you coverage of the Stephen Foster. We'll have the Penn Mile, races like the Black Eyed Susan, the Pimlico Special. Then the summer season kicks off with the Queen's Plate at Woodbine, the Whitney, the Arlington Million, the Travers, the Charlestown Oaks. You'll hear that race in mid-September. And then all the road to the Breeders' Cup races with the big day at Belmont and Santa Anita. You got the Jockey Club Gold Cup, the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic, the Awesome Again at Santa Anita, the Front Runner. All those big races coming up at the end of September. And then we're right into Keeneland for their fall meet and all the big Breeders' Cup preps. And, of course, the Breeders' Cup coming to Keeneland later this November. November 6th and 7th, we'll be there to bring you exclusive radio coverage of the Breeders' Cup World Championships and all that coverage throughout the week. And don't forget about the Maryland Million, too. That's always fun at Laurel in October, middle of October. So a lot of stuff coming your way. It's going to be a busy year for us here on the network. And again, listeners in 146 different countries have made us their home for Thoroughbred Racing in 2019. And happy to have you along for the ride with us here in 2020. Also want to give a shout out to the FTBOA for their support of the Pegasus World Cup broadcast and the Florida Derby, both of those presented by the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association, and what a job they're doing with that program down there in Florida. You want to make sure you go check everything out on their website and be part of that program, because they are really working hard to do some really innovative things down there in Florida with that program. Well, I told you Aaron Wellman is going to be with me in just a little bit after our Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment, that brand new segment with Bobby Newman, which comes your way in just about 5 minutes. Aaron Wellman and Eclipse have had a ton of success in this game. And because of that, Aaron's going to be our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris here on this Saturday morning. They've had a ton of success. And Independence Hall, undefeated in those, three lifetime starts, kicked off his three-year-old campaign on New Year's Day with that big win in the Jerome. And I want to ask Aaron about the way he behaved in the pre-race, because he was so keyed up. It took a lot to settle him down. But when he got into the starting gate and left the starting gate, none of that seemed to matter. I want to ask Aaron if that's always been somewhat of a trait that he's seen in Independence Hall. Get his thoughts on that. Jose Ortiz, just what a job he did to get this horse in position. I realize he was a heavy favorite in there. He won the way a heavy favorite is supposed to win. He drew off, he won by four, stalked the pace, did everything the right way. Now, like all the other three-year-olds out there, he still has a lot to prove. We don't have a three-year-old yet who's come to that. You just heard Tim Wilkin, in that previous segment, going back and forth with me on the top two-year-olds of last year and who we had on our Eclipse Award ballot for the two-year-olds, that was one of the more wide-open categories. And now those two-year-olds are three-year-olds, and nobody has really stepped forward and said, to this point, I'm the horse to beat. You don't have an American Pharoah. You don't have a Well, Justify, we didn't see him till he was three. But you don't have a horse that has established themselves as being the horse at the head of the class in that division yet. Just hasn't happened. It will. I mean, Dennis's Moment, ultra impressive for Dale Romans, but had that horrible beginning to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Bast. Bast is a good horse for Bob Baffert. Check that. That's two-year-old fillies. Bass is a two-year-old filly. But on the two-year-old boys, how about Maxfield? How about Maxfield? There's a horse for Brendan Walsh that was 2-for-2 last year and looked good winning both of those races, had the disappointment of having to scratch before the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. But the Son of Street Sense, Maxfield, certainly a horse that you can make a case for. I mentioned Structor being my top selection for the juvenile champion of 2019, but Structor hasn't raced on dirt. How will he handle the dirt if they decide to go that direction? Well, he's a son of Palace Malice out of a More Than Ready mare, so pedigree-wise, he should handle the dirt. Be interesting to see if they try him on dirt coming up and try to get him on the Derby trail, but man, was he impressive through his campaign. Three starts, three wins, all on turf, including that win in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile turf. Storm the Court, what do you do with him? Pulled off the huge upset in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at 45-1. And then, yeah, Independence Hall. Now 3-for-3. He's won his races by 4 lengths, 12 and a quarter lengths, and 4 and 3 quarter lengths. His 3 wins. Nobody's been close to Independence Hall yet. The Son of Constitution just continues to click along. Tim Wilkin mentioned Tis the Law being a horse that he's high on. You have 8 rings for Bob Baffert. Disappointed in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but before that, looked pretty good. So I think there are a lot of good 3-year-olds out there, but nobody has stepped forward and said, I'm the one to beat. Not yet, anyway. It's going to be a fun road to the Kentucky Derby. If you're just joining me, 119 days, 8 hours, 13 minutes, and 25 seconds away from the first Saturday in May at Churchill Downs. A little something to warm you up on a cold January morning here in the heart of the Bluegrass. All right, going to get to another commercial break. When I come back, our brand new Calling All 3-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift and my visit with Aaron Wellman from Eclipse Thoroughbreds. This is the Equine Forum on HRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Gio Ponti, a 3-time Eclipse Award winner.
Gio Ponti adds the million to his grade one collection.
Champion older male.
The champion, Gio Ponti, to take the Shadwell Turf Mile for Ramon Dominguez.
And 2-time champion male turf horse with career earnings over $6 million.
Final 16th of the Shadwell Turf Mile, Gio Ponti, Wise Dan, charging after Get Stormy. Gio Ponti from the outside. How about that? Gio Ponti will go back to the winner's circle.
In 2019, Gio Ponti is the sire of 10 stakes horses and 7 stakes winners from 5.5 furlongs to 12 furlongs, including Grade 2 winner America's Tale, Grade 3 winner Gucci Factor, and stakes winners Long Runner, Dubini, Giovanna Blues, and Olympic Runner. In addition, Gio Ponti has produced champion sprinter and Grade 1 Breeders' Cup sprint winner Dre Fong and $1 million Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs. Gio Ponti, standing at Castleton Lions.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Racing fans, join us this weekend as we continue to ring in the new year with world-class racing at spectacular Santa Anita. Join us this Saturday, January 4th, as Derby hopefuls go a mile on the main track in the Grade 3 $100,000 Sham Stakes, with the winner to receive 10 Kentucky Derby qualifying points. Also on Saturday, older horses will go a mile and one-eighth on turf in the Grade 2 $200,000 San Gabriel. First post time on Saturday is at 11:30, Santa Anita. Great racing and great value in a world-class world-class setting.
Adina Springs bred, raced, and developed Awesome Again and Ghost Sapper into important stallions. Now comes Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, bred, raced, and backed by the strength of Adina. A Hall of Fame runner like his sire and grandsire, Shaman Ghost captured the classic Queen's Plate at three en route to his Sovereign Award championship.
And Shaman Ghost takes the Queen's Plate!
At ages 4 and 5, Shaman Ghost made cross-country history as the only horse in the past 30 years to capture both the Woodward Stakes and Santa Anita Handicap.
Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost! An overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile!
Shaman Ghost would go on to earn over $3.8 million with repeated success at the highest level. Additional graded wins include the Grade 2 Brooklyn Invitational, the Marine Stakes, and Pimlico Special, before defeating the likes of Keen Ice and California Chrome, went second to Arrogate in the inaugural $16 million Pegasus World Cup. Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, standing at Adina Springs, Kentucky. Look for his fantastic first yearlings at the sales in 2020.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Independence Hall by a length and a half as they come for the quarter pole. Prince of Pharaohs on the outside, Bourbon Bay. Three quarters went in 1:12 and 2. It is Independence Hall with the lead. And now a furlong to the finish. Jose Ortiz showing him the whip. Now goes to work on Independence Hall, who has a three-length lead. Just a 16th to the finish. And it's the Constitution Colt, Independence Hall, to win the Jerome. Won it by 4 lengths. It was a photo for second between Prince of Pharaohs and Bourbon Bay. And the mile was run in 1:37 1/5 seconds.
John Embriel bringing them home in the Jerome. That was the New Year's Day feature at Aqueduct Independence Hall. A perfect 3 for 3 to begin his young career, and now off to a great start as a three-year-old as well. He's owned by Aaron Wellman from Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, who is going to be with me right after this brand new segment that you'll hear every single week all the way through the Kentucky Derby. It is time for Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
Hi, this is Bobby Newman with this week's edition of Calling All Three-Year-Olds presented by Spendthrift Farm. Well, the Derby prep season got underway this past Wednesday at Aqueduct with the running of the $150,000 Jerome Stakes, 1 mile on a main track labeled good, and Independence Hall returned off a smashing win in the Grade 3 Nashua. He was sent off the 1-9 favorite at post time. Boy, but was he a handful before they even got to the starting gate. In fact, throwing a fit in the paddock as they tried to put the saddle on him, took two handlers and the assistance of one of the outriders to stick with him and calm his nerves just to get him out of the paddock. He finally calmed down on the racetrack, but once he got into the starting gate, didn't break slow. In fact, lost several lengths right at the start. No problem, though. Jockey Jose Ortiz guided the favorite to the outside, and he cruised along to an impressive 4-length score, earning 10 very valuable points toward this year's Kentucky Derby in doing so. Well, we've got two big races on tap later today on the road to the Triple Crown, one at Santa Anita, one at Gulfstream Park. We started Santa Anita with the Grade $300,000 Sham Stakes for three-year-olds at a mile on the main track. The morning line favorite, Authentic, a son of Into Mischief, goes for trainer Bob Baffert. Very impressive, breaking his maiden last time out in his debut. He'll try two turns for the first time this afternoon. And at Gulfstream Park, it's the $100,000 Mucho Macho Man Stakes. Three-year-olds at a flat mile on their main track. Marks the return of Chance It, who we last saw winning the in-reality division of the Florida Sire Stakes a few months ago. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
2019 champion General Sire Into Mischief, Spendthrift's first since Seattle Slough.
Coming down to the line, and Cole Feffi does it!
2019 champion Second Crop Sire Golden Sense, Into Mischief's best son and one of only 8 sophomore sires ever to top $5.5 million in progeny earnings.
And they're running away, Mr. Money by 5.
One serious sire line in the making. Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, Independence Hall, 3 for 3 in his career, headed down to Tampa Bay Downs, may show up February 8th in the Sam F. Davis Stakes for his next start. Number two is Maxfield. Had to scratch with a minor injury before the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Should resume training in Florida later this month. Number three, Thousand Words. 2 for 2 after winning the Low South Futurity. Scheduled to go in the Robert F. Lewis on February 1st or the San Felipe on March 7th, either at Santa Anita for his next start. Number four, Dennis's Moment. Stumbled badly in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Didn't get to strut his best stuff. He's preparing for his next start in the Fountain of Youth on February 29th. And number five, Storm the Court. The winner of last year's Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He should resume training shortly, and we'll see him back on the track in February or March. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
All right, and you heard Bobby, the horse he has ranked on top at this point, the undefeated Independence Hall, who is owned in partnership by our good friend Aaron Wellman and his Eclipse Thoroughbred Partnership, Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners. And Aaron is with me now. He's up early in California. Aaron, appreciate you getting up early, and Happy New Year.
Same to you, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start with that win in the Jerome. Let's kind of go back to the pre-race. Independence Hall was a bit of a handful, to say the least, in the paddock, and then settled down when he got into the starting gate. But what was going through your mind as you're watching all that unfold?
Paranoia. Sheer and utter paranoia. No, you know, we had seen him act up a little bit in the paddock before the Nashua. He's a good feeling horse, and Mike Trombetta has done a really good job of trying to school him and get him to his on-track race location a couple days ahead of time in schooling, and the horse has been fine in his schooling sessions, but he's a smart horse, and he definitely knows the difference between schooling and game time, and he just really wants to get out there on the track and strut his stuff, so there were some dicey moments. Mike and his team did a fantastic job keeping him under control, getting him out onto the racetrack. And once he legged Jose up and got with the pony, he was all business from there. So we were having our nerves calmed once he was on the racetrack.
Yeah, it didn't seem to affect him once the gates opened and he did his thing. I know he was a heavy favorite in there and he won the way you like to see a heavy favorite win, but Aaron, that's been a recurring theme with this horse. Nobody's really been close to him yet.
Yeah, you know, I try to stay away from the blog posts and the comments on stories and stuff like that. I think the public's being a little harsh on his performance the other day because the expectations were so high. But reality is he was on a very difficult racetrack at Aqueduct on Wednesday. It was slow and tiring and deep. He hadn't run in 2 months. He was spotting 5 pounds to his rivals, and he turned his head at the start and gave him a head start on top of it all, not to mention the wide trip. So we thought it was a really good performance. Jose Ortiz was very pleased with what he felt underneath him, and the fact that he was running through the wire the way he was just what we wanted to see. So the buyer came back a little light, but we just got the Ragusan back yesterday, and remarkably, he paired his four from the Nashua. So what we felt in our gut seems to be validated by the numbers.
Have you noticed any changes in him from that Nashua to what you're seeing now as he entered into the Jerome and starts his three-year-old campaign, either physically or well, certainly mentally? We know he's dealing with some things there and trying to overcome them, as you alluded to, but how about physically? Is there a difference in Independence Hall now as opposed to his two-year-old campaign?
I think it's subtle.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted to give him that space between the Nashua and the Jerome, to treat it as an effort. As easy as he made it look in the Nashua, we had to realize that it was an effort, and we didn't want to do too much with him too soon. So that gave him an opportunity to grow physically, and he did. He popped up a little bit. Randy Goulad of Twin Creeks has been intimately familiar with this colt from day one because of their involvement in Constitution. And I rely on his eye in this instance just because he's been able to track the colt so closely along the way. And when he showed up in the paddock for the Jerome the other day, Randy was really pleased with what he saw in terms of his growth and just lengthening. Everything about him is right. He's just such a not just a striking horse in terms of, you know, his jet black color and his sort of distinctive white blaze, but he's just a really well put together individual with a lot of scope, a lot of presence. And the manner in which he moves so efficiently is really a thing of beauty. So, you know, we're obviously very high on him, but nothing matters about what I'm saying as long as he keeps on doing the talking out there on the racetrack.
What's next? Sam F. Davis, is that the game plan?
You know, we're not etching anything in stone right now. The beauty of starting him in the Jerome on New Year's Day is that it really allows for a lot of flexibility moving forward. Having been fortunate enough to be down this road a few times in the past with other Derby prospects, you can learn from some of your mistakes along the way. And one of the mistakes that I think I've made is the gap between a late year two-year-old race and waiting until February or March to run a colt that's turned three that you have Derby aspirations for. That's one of the things that we try to avoid in this instance by getting him started. So the plan is right now we've got a van lined up for him on Monday, and he is going to winter at Tampa Bay Downs. So obviously the Sam F. Davis, the first week of February, would certainly be on our radar. I would say it would boil down to the Sam Davis or the Fountain of Youth. And that decision will be made by Michael Trombetta based on how he feels the horse is training.
Visiting with Aaron Wellman from Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Aaron, let's rewind the clock to early November and look back on the Breeders' Cup last year. In particular, filly by the name of Sharing, who got the victory for you guys. Big, big fashion, too, for Grand Motion. What's an update on Sharing? What can we expect from her?
She's doing fantastic. We gave her about 30 days off at Fair Hill at Graham's Base after the Breeders' Cup. She was turned out in the paddock every day and really just enjoyed herself. The weather started to turn on us a little bit, so Graham wanted to get her down to Palm Meadows to his winter base, get her in some sun. So she's been down there for about 3-4 weeks now. And just in light training, nothing too intense, nothing too serious. But the target that we're trying to work backwards from to get her three-year-old season started is the Florida Oaks in early March at Tampa. We think that should be a nice launching pad. And from there, hopefully her performance on that occasion allows us to have some options, whether we stick with the turf and maybe consider an enterprising adventure like Royal Ascot, or, you know, she did break her maiden on the dirt at Saratoga, and that's something that we've always had in the back of our minds. So, you know, a Kentucky Oaks prep race to see how she stacks up against the best three-year-old fillies on the dirt could be in the cards as well. We're anxiously awaiting the Eclipse Award nominee announcement here in a little bit. We know we certainly don't have any shot against British Idiom, who is an absolute shoo-in and deservedly so, but it would be a tremendous honor for Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners and Gainesway Farm and the Breeders' Sagamore to have Sharing nominated on the ballot for top two-year-old filly, and we're hoping that she gets the nod.
Yeah, I can tell you I shared some of my selections earlier. I do have a vote in the Eclipse Awards, and I was joined by Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times-Union, and Sharing is in my top three of the two-year-old fillies from last year. And you're right, British Idiom is likely to win that category, but I think Sharing deserves to be in the mix as well. Are there any other three-year-olds from the Eclipse stable that we should be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, you know, Independence Hall is certainly on everybody's radar, and he's capturing a lot of attention and headlines right now, and deservedly so, which we're pleased to be part of, no doubt. But we've got a couple other three-year-olds that we think quite highly of. We did acquire a colt called Soros, who won the Smooth Air Stakes at Gulfstream last month. He's staying with Gustavo Delgado, and we're aiming for a Derby prep race for him sometime in February. So he's an exciting colt by commissioner who's actually out of a full sister of the Dam of Carolina, who represented our stable quite well a few years back. Several grade ones, and we've got a maiden colt who's flying underneath the radar right now by the name of Farmington Road. We campaign in partnership with Bob LaPenta and Chrysalis Stables. He's a quality road colt that we sprinted first time to get him some experience, and he ran a sneaky good fifth at Belmont, and then we stretched him out to a mile on Remsen Day at Aqueduct, again, a one-turn race, but an elongated sprint, and he made a really, really nice move to be second behind a good horse at Belmont's called Moon Over Miami. And we're looking to stretch him out around two turns, and we think that once he does, he's going to make a name for himself and perhaps pop into some of these Derby preps February, March, thereabouts.
Aaron Wellman,
on the Philly side of it. Oops, sorry, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, I've got to get to one final break here. Aaron, don't mean to cut you off, but we'll encourage people to head over to your Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners website to see all those candidates and the whole roster there as well. But appreciate the visit, and all the best moving forward, and congrats again on Independence Hall.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Happy and healthy New Year to you and the family. Appreciate you having me on.
You too. Aaron Wellman, Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, like all of our guests, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Back to wrap it up right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire, World of Trouble.
World of Trouble and Manny Franco win the Jiper.
World of Trouble takes the Carter.
One of the fastest horses of his generation, the son of Cantharos captured both the Grade 1 Carter on dirt and Grade 1 Jiper on turf this year, and would go on to record 100-plus buyer speed figures in his last seven starts, including a 118 buyer as a three-year-old, the highest three-year-old buyer speed figure of 2018. World of Trouble, standing at Hillendale.
The championship meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park. Come and enjoy the heart-pounding excitement of live thoroughbred horse racing showcasing some of the best jockeys and horses in the world, all while experiencing the best in VIP hospitality in South Florida. Make sure to book your experience for the Pegasus World Cup 2020 on Saturday, January 25th, blending entertainment, innovation, and thoroughbred horse racing like no other event of its kind. For more information on the championship meet or Pegasus World Cup, visit GulfstreamPark.com. That's GulfstreamPark.com.
Shadwell Farm, home to world-class stallions, presents two young stars. Mo Heyman, undefeated two-year-old, multiple graded stakes winner at 2 and 3. A dazzling son of Tappan, winner of his first 5 career starts, 4 in graded stakes. Grade 1 winner, Tamer Coos, winner of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. This son of Spitestown was a top international miler that earned over $1.8 million. Shadwell Farm, building speed for the future.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere, or visit centralequipment.com.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Dor! Caraconti!
Gainsway stallion Caraconti, a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 132 and 4 fifths, recording a 114 buyer speed figure. From the Totney Arcos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesque. Caraconti was a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and has already sired 3 first crop stakes winners and 2 additional stakes placed 2-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior. The Group 3 winner remains undefeated in 3 starts in England. And Caraconti has commercial appeal, with 2-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Caraconti has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainsway.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
My thanks to all of our guests for joining me this morning, helping to make this show possible. Michael Hernan kicked it off with our Stallion Spotlight segment. That was Michael talking about the Gainsway Stallions. Safi Joseph Jr. was with me in the first half of the program talking about Chancic going in today's Mucho Macho Man at Gulfstream. Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times-Union looking back on the life of Mary Lou Whitney and talking about the Eclipse Award ballots. And Aaron Wellman from Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners just a short time ago. Boy, does he have it rolling with Eclipse. They're doing a tremendous job over there. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of this program or any of our shows, simply head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. You can do that at your leisure. You can also do that on Apple Podcasts, another way to listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network. Remember, you can follow us on social media, too, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and on Instagram. Now, for my producer, Lee Delapina, here in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, for Chauncey helping out with all the social media, I'm Mike Pena. We'll talk to you next time here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And hey, what the heck? Why not? Go Steelers.